Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Y'all know how much I hate Florida, and I don't ever want to have to give Florida credit for anything. But admittedly, when you look back over the recent history of college football, over the last few decades, there is something in which that Florida does deserve some credit for. There is something in which Florida had a hand in altering about college football that no doubt lingers to this day. You remember when Steve Spurrier was the coach at Florida, the offense was famously called the fun and gun. And Gators back then were having a really good time, throwing the ball all over the yard, scoring a bunch of touchdowns, led to a national championship in 1996, and led really to a program identity that lingers even today. You know, Florida fans just kind of like that brand of football, and really around the rest of college football in the years after that, some places it took a little longer. You know, the evolution has continued even up to the present day, but ever since Steve Spurrier kind of got things going at Florida back in the 90s, there has seemingly been a connection between the notion of having fun and winning football games, that it's not one of those things where, hey, you may, you know, score a bunch of points and that's pretty for fans, but you win the game by eating your vegetables, by playing defense, by running the football. Over the course of time, college football has become a little bit less about those kinds of things, that for the most part, the games that are the most fun to watch are typically the games featuring the very best teams. And if you're having fun as a fan base, as a program, if the games themselves are fun, then usually there's a pretty good chance you could be on your way to winning big. Last couple of years around Georgia football, let's just be honest about something for a moment. It hasn't always been fun for fans. Now, I'm in the position I am as the host of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. I hear from a lot of fans during the game, after the game, even in a year like 2019, where for the most part, Georgia was winning. SEC championship game appearance, you know, beating up on some rivals. You know, there were some good moments for Georgia in the 2019 season, but even in the midst of those games, there were still a lot of complaints from fans of, why aren't we throwing the ball better? Why aren't these games, just generally speaking, more fun to watch? And sometimes there is something to the wisdom of crowd. Sometimes there is something to the fact that Georgia has kind of fallen on more hard times this year, losing to Alabama, losing to Florida. Maybe some of that was predicted by the fans who watched the 2019 version of Georgia and said, you know what, this just isn't very fun. And as I said before, it seems like there's a stronger connection between fun and winning. Well, the good news is, based on what you saw Saturday night at Sanford Stadium between Georgia and Mississippi State, the fun is back for Georgia football. And there's one person that you have to credit for that. There's one person, frankly, that I want to personally thank for that, because, listen, I was incredibly entertained by what I saw Saturday night for Georgia, and I think many of you would probably say the same thing there as well. This was as fun of a Georgia football game to watch as we've seen in a long time, and the quarterback, JT Daniels, was a big reason why. Not in my wildest dreams did I think that Daniels would have played as well as he did on Saturday. Not because he's not a top-flight quarterback prospect, but just because I thought there were some reasons to maybe try to temper your expectations a little bit. But my gosh, what Daniels did on Saturday just completely blew past anything that I thought was possible for him, and I found myself transfixed by the entire thing. I thought all of it was fun. And all of a sudden now you start to think, well, gosh, what you saw from Georgia on Saturday, it was only 31 points in a time in which a lot of programs are scoring, you know, 40 and pushing 50. But what you saw from Georgia on Saturday does resemble a little bit of what the best teams in college football have been doing over the course of the last couple of years. All of a sudden now, it's a little bit easier to conjure up a pathway for Georgia to get back to the college football elite, even in a night when they weren't playing great defense necessarily, weren't running the football certainly, you know, very well at all. It's just easier to kind of conjure up an idea that Georgia could be back doing things at the highest level of college football again very soon, given the way that this game goes, given the energy that Daniels brought to the entire proceedings. And if you really want to sum all of this up perfectly, I think the feeling of the night, the capsule that captures the entire night, kind of came up with Daniels in the post-game press conference when he got a chance to speak to reporters, and he was asked about, hey, you know, taking some big strikes to George Pickens early and kind of come out swinging and coming out firing. And Daniels, with a little bit of a dose of maybe humility, but also a dose of confidence, and really just a very direct statement about how he views Georgia's offense, the potential that it has, and what he sees could be his role in all of this. If I could inject this quote into my veins, I promise you I would. It is that good. Here is JT Daniels on his wide receivers.
If you have George Pickens and Jermaine Burton, if you're not going to throw it up to him, don't recruit him. You know, I mean, George will make me look good. Jermaine makes me look good. Kiaris makes me look really good when I underthrow a deep ball down the middle and makes a great play. If you're going to give one-on-one with George, Kiaris, and Jermaine and all our guys, I'm probably going to want to make you try and show me that you can stop it.
I mean, listen to that swagger. And that's not, you know, like obnoxious cockiness or anything like that. There may be a little bit of heavy self-confidence there, which I think is probably a good thing. But that's not anything obnoxious. That's not anything too over the top. That's just a guy who believes in his own abilities and, frankly, believes in the abilities of his teammates as well. Having that swagger back again for Georgia football, I think, is really good. And the experience that Jermaine Burton got in almost setting a record for the most receiving yards ever. I think he finished number 4 in terms of a single game mark for what he did Saturday against Mississippi State. George Pickens back involved. All of that sets the stage for momentum that could be in place for Georgia the rest of this season. I mean, there's a lot to be said about what happened Saturday, and there is a lot to be said about what will happen for Georgia over the course of the rest of the year. But I think it's appropriate here for a moment, just off the beginning of the show, to say this, that the best teams in college football also happen to be the most entertaining teams. Alabama, admittedly, is fun to watch right now. LSU was fun to watch last season. Clemson has been really fun to watch for a couple of years. Last night, or I should say Saturday night, Georgia itself was finally really fun to watch. Fun football, entertaining football in 2020 has a way of being winning football. Georgia winning at the highest level. We may not be too far away from being able to appreciate the possibility of that once again. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Good to have you with us. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And we really appreciate our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making all this possible. You know, they help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. That matters as we head towards that holiday season. We get the fire in the fireplace, the heat running. You don't want that stuff escaping out the outside of your house. You don't want that energy escaping out of the house. Pella Window and Door of Georgia kind of prevents that from happening. So they'll take really good care of you on that as you head towards the winter time of year. They also have great savings for you as well. Between now and November 28th, you can get 15% off your entire project or no payments, no interest for 12 months. Pella offers some of the best warranties and service with unparalleled expertise. It's also really easy to get in touch with them. PellaBranch.com is the website. That's PellaBranch.com. Or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom, 404-445-2979. 404-445-2979. Pella Window of Georgia is viewed to be the best. I know a lot of you thinking about that, you know, tough to buy for person, whether it's the husband buying for the wife buying for the husband. A lot of you know you need better windows and doors. Honestly, that makes a great holiday gift as we head towards that time of the year. So keep Pella Window and Door of Georgia in mind for that. It'll be John Stinchcomb coming up in a moment. For now, I want to get into the other part of the JT Daniels story from Saturday as we go around the doghouse here, assisted today by our friends at AAA. Admittedly, I am pretty fascinated by the question of, well, why didn't JT Daniels play before now? And admittedly, I thought that Smart's attempt at answering that question on Saturday night probably left a little something to be desired. And it would be inappropriate for us to have this conversation today without at least addressing this part of all of that. So the clip I'm about to play for you is a little longer than a clip I might normally play, but I want to give the full context for what Smart had to say on Saturday. The question is, can you understand why some fans are wondering why it took so long to get JT Daniels on the field? This is what Smart had to say.
Absolutely, I would. But I also think that people should take into consideration that, you know, I've been coaching football for, I don't know how many years, 20, 25 years, and God knows Munkin's probably double me, as old as he is. And there's not a decision that we make as coaches and a coaching staff, an offensive staff with 5 guys that I adore and think the world of. You know, maybe the question should be, man, aren't they glad they got JT here when nobody thought that maybe we needed him? Would I have loved for him to gone out there and done the same thing against other teams? Absolutely. But the decisions we made based on giving us the best opportunity to win. And a lot of that had to do with mobility and Stetson's play. And as that struggled, we had to look for other options. And he did a great job with his opportunity. He also had some help in receivers that came back and the way Mississippi State played them. But I don't want to use that to put, you know, to demean how he played. He played unbelievable. I am proud as hell of the way he played. But every decision we make is based on what gives us the best opportunity to win the game. And the men in that room that are making those decisions, they've got a lot of experience doing it.
So, listen, this whole thing to me feels like a quote from Smart and a storyline around Daniels, very much of the moment for the time in which we live in 2020, where someone who's in charge says, trust me because I know that I'm right. And that's fine. Maybe Smart is. But this is also an example of where the guy in charge, admittedly a successful football coach, and the truth is I think that Smart has been a great coach at Georgia, and I think that he'll continue to be a great coach at Georgia. But this is an example of a guy with a heaping helping of expertise, and Smart kind of rattled through some of his credentials right there, you know, kind of bragging on that expertise when what really might have helped out here is to have a little bit of a dose of common sense. In other words, if you've got JT Daniels and he's been a starter before, he's been a five-star, you know, prospect coming out of high school, that if he's healthy, common sense would dictate that he is your best quarterback, that he himself would probably give you your best chance to win unless there are really unusual circumstances at play. And Smart's answer on this would seem to just not make a lot of sense, understanding the common sense that would lead one to believe that Daniels, if healthy, was the best quarterback here. Now, a lot of folks are going to say, well, B.A., you can criticize Smart if you want to, but after Steve Daniels, JT Daniels' dad spoke out with our buddy Mike Griffith from Dog Nation on the pages of DogNation.com on Sunday. I think at this point in time, doesn't that lend credence to what Kirby Smart just said right there? And frankly, I'm not quite so sure it clears things up as well as some Georgia fans seem to think that it does. But let me read to you one of the quotes here. This from Steve Daniels speaking. This is JT Daniels' dad speaking to Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. JT's dad says, as parents, Allie and I feel blessed to be at a place like Georgia with a coach like Kirby, who puts our son's health first and foremost. Kirby didn't rush him or put him out there too soon. And that's why you come to a place like this for this kind of support. Now, there's a lot to say about this. First of all, huge thanks to Mr. Daniels for speaking up on a topic like this that's so important to so many Georgia fans. He didn't have to go public, but the fact that he spoke to Mike about this, I think, is a really classy thing on the part of Daniels. And yes, admittedly, as a Georgia fan, the fact that JT Daniels' dad is saying these things about Georgia, it makes me feel really good to hear Daniels' dad bragging on how they've been treated at UGA thus far. This is an important part of the storyline around all of this. And by the way, I'll be self-serving here and give a little bit of a shout out to Mike. It's a good job by Mike tracking down statements like that right now. I think all that's really well and really good. But here's the thing, and I'm going to go a couple more minutes on this. Here's the thing that I think you've got to say, though, is that for a lot of people who say, well, what Daniel says clears up everything regarding this situation. I think the problem with that, though, is that Kirby Smart himself has never quite been as clear on this topic as Mr. Daniels was right there. In other words, in order to kind of clean up Kirby Smart's part of this, you either have to pretend Smart has said things that he hasn't said or ignore things that Smart actually has said. Because what Daniels' dad says is this is all related to health. They've gone slowly, you know, because of the health. Daniels, at one point in time, I'll read you another quote from the story, says, I was out there in August and I saw JT in a scrimmage and you can tell he wasn't 100%. You could see in JT's throws he wasn't able to get the same velocity on some of his passes, and that's one of the things that separates him is his accuracy. Now, I have reason to believe that the description that Daniels gives there is something close to true, because I talked to a number of people who had seen the third and final scrimmage, the one just a couple of weeks before Georgia took on Arkansas. Daniels played very little in that scrimmage, I was told, and in the moments in which he did play, they really weren't all that spectacular. The big throws we saw him making on Saturday night, he didn't really make those in the scrimmage that some Georgia boosters had a chance to see a couple of weeks before the start of the season. So it certainly stands to reason that Daniels was not healthy enough to play at the very beginning of the year. The fact that he wasn't cleared for Arkansas is proof of that. Daniels' words here, Mr. Daniels' words here, proof of that. Eyewitness accounts from people who saw that third scrimmage, that's certainly proof of that. So we understand that. We also understand that on Saturday night, Daniels is clearly healthy enough and ready to play. What that leaves you, though, in between, though, is the chasm of, well, when did Daniels go from being unhealthy, not able to play, to healthy and able to play? And was there a moment in which a healthy Daniels, capable of throwing for 400 yards against a defense that came in second in the SEC in passing yards allowed for the game on Saturday, was there a moment in which the Georgia coaching staff looked at a healthy JT Daniels and said, this is not our best option to win? And if there was a moment at some time this year when Georgia's coaching staff made a decision to do that, then the coaching staff made a mistake. Now, it's not a fatal mistake that they can never overcome. It's not the kind of thing that proves Kirby Smart's an idiot and shouldn't be coaching. And it wasn't an intentional error, but it was an error nonetheless, especially if the moment in which Daniels was healthy and able to play was before the Florida game, and Georgia chose not to do that anyway. Now, let me go to 24/7 Sports here. Brandon Marcello, writing for 24/7 Sports, after the Kentucky game, in which Stetson Bennett had thrown interceptions, ahead of the Florida game, which was the most important game that Georgia would play that season, this is what Marcello from 24/7 Sports wrote leading into that game at that time ahead of the Florida game. Do we have this? Can we show this on the screen? This is Brandon Marcello writing for 24/7 Sports. JT Daniels is on standby, Marcello said before the Florida game. The long-heralded transfer from Southern Cal is ready. He wants to play. He believes he's ready to face live fire in a college football game. Georgia's coaching staff, however, is not as excited. Sources close to the Bulldogs program tell 24/7 Sports. So somebody close to Daniels before the Florida game said he's healthy and able to play, and said that the Georgia coaching staff was still choosing to play Stetson Bennett in place of JT Daniels. Can't we all agree that if that was true, that was a mistake? Not the kind of mistake that you can't come back from. Not the kind of error that dooms the program forever. But also not the kind of thing that we should just ignore as a blunder in the year that we're in. Now, somebody said this to me on Twitter yesterday. Oh, BA, you're just looking to create a narrative here. Let's be very candid about this for a moment. If I'm looking to create a narrative, the narrative that I'm looking to create is a pro-Georgia narrative. I'm not, you know, some sports writer doing a podcast as a hobby. This is a for-profit enterprise here. I do this for a living. And as I've told you many times before, good news is good for business. Finding a way to talk about how great Georgia is every single day is the only narrative that I could construct that would actually line my pockets with money. I just wish in this case it were a little bit easier to do that. If Daniels was healthy before the Florida game and didn't play, then Georgia has made a mistake. And hopefully they'll get a chance in the days ahead, the weeks ahead, months ahead, maybe years ahead to make up for that. It's Around the Doghouse. It's assisted today by our friends at AAA. And, of course, we appreciate them being a part of the program. We love their legendary roadside assistance. We're thankful about that. We also love the way in which they save us money, including the AAA Savings Hack Pack. It's a combination of benefits worth more than $1,000. It includes free career assistance, identity theft protection, up to 85% off prescriptions, and discounts on food and essentials. The Hack Pack is a part of every AAA membership, and you can go to AAA.com/GoSavings to find out more about this. That's AAA.com/GoSavings and find out how you can benefit from the AAA Savings Hack Pack when you become a member there of that. All right, it's a busy weekend around the SEC. We'll cover some of that before we're done on today's program. We'll also look now at some of the other issues facing Georgia. What happened defensively on Saturday? How about the absence of the running game? That plus a lot more on JT Daniels. Let's talk to John Stinchcomb right now as a part of a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll bring in John Stinchcomb here now, Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with him. It was certainly an eventful day, John, on Saturday for Georgia. As I said before you joined us, it was one of the most entertaining UGA games I've seen in quite some time. Maybe somewhat, you know, telling too that the success of Daniels kind of glossing over some of the other things that Georgia didn't do quite as well in this game. But I'm sure we'll spend a few minutes on this. Let me just kind of start broad and we'll work our way into the more intricate details after that. What did you think of JT Daniels' debut on Saturday?
I couldn't have gone any better. I think that's what everybody thought, right? 400 plus yards passing with four touchdowns and no complimentary run game. I mean, quite honestly, I was wrong. I was expecting him to show some growing pains and some rust, and there's a reason why he was so low on the depth chart, and boy, he blew all that out of the water. So I know it's one game against a 2-4 Mississippi State team that barely brought a handful of scholarship athletes, but man, for a first effort, a debut performance. I couldn't have drawn up, I don't know who could realistically draw up a better performance for a guy to step in mid-season and perform the way he did.
And I don't think it's empty. I don't think it's meaningless, even though the games themselves now are kind of after the, you know, the losses that cost Georgia a chance at competing for this year's championships, because the experience that you get for Jermaine Burton, and on Saturday he came close to setting a Georgia record, the involvement that Daniels was able to provide to a George Pickens, something that Pickens really hasn't had this year, you know, that gives Georgia a chance as you head towards the 2021 season. Not to say that we're fully looking ahead of that, but you have to think about, you know, what Georgia brings back for 2021. The last 2 years, John, Georgia has been, you know, kind of hamstrung at the start of the year by an inexperienced group of receivers. You could say there was talent there, but, you know, the stat guys will tell you that experience matters a receiver. Georgia really hasn't had that. Well, now for 2021, you can say you've got the talented receivers, and you've got all of a sudden now the seasoning those guys need to go along with that, where you really could potentially view heading towards next year, assuming that the offense continues to hum along for the final games the way that it did on Saturday, where the receiver position of Georgia isn't one of those anchors that impedes progress. It could be one of the main reasons why Georgia is predicted for success next season. That, as much as anything, is the pivotal impact that Daniels' performance on Saturday could lead to for Georgia the rest of the way.
Well, it's nice to have that be a reality, not just a topic of discussion, but you see these young players, and let's not forget Dom Blaylock is, boy, did he flash last year, and he's been in the season rehabbing. So you combine that with a young Burton who looks super talented and had a career day. You know, he's up there with the Terrence Edwards, a Dog Nation favorite. You know, Muhammad Massaquah and Tavares King, Hines Ward. You look at that list, and they're very distinguished names that he is now right in the middle or at the top of. And that was just an impressive performance. But it's because you get a quarterback that, you know, not every deep ball was beautiful, but, man, did he put it in a spot where the receiver could make a play on it, and Burton did. So it was a combined performance between the two to get you really excited. And the reemergence of George Pickens, I felt like, God, as much as we made before the season and before each game, he just hasn't had the opportunities that I think everyone was expecting him to have. And on Saturday, you heard his name a number of times, and your mind starts racing ahead of what's to come. And what I'll be honest, BA, when we start talking about the potential for 2021, I get excited, but it also upsets me a little bit because we're still in the middle of 20. I know there's a handful of teams that have an opportunity at the beginning of year to play for a national championship, but there's a lot that don't.
Yeah.
And just because Georgia is no longer playing for the title, I am not one of those who's in a camp that the season is over and we start looking at 2021. I there is still a lot of football left to play. And you don't just pack up the tents and just say, all right, well, it's on to 2021. That's not the way this game works, and I don't think it should work that way. I think there's a lot left to prove and play for, and just because you're not playing for a national championship doesn't give you a pass to say, I give up on the program, I give up on your team. We haven't said that here, but yeah. I certainly have heard it on some of these other stations of what's a guy's motivation. That's crap.
Yeah.
I work myself up, BA.
I love it. I love it.
It really bother me.
I love it. Well, let's see if I can get you worked up a little bit more here on a slightly different topic. John, I think it's totally fair, the questions that Smart faced on Saturday of why no JT Daniels before now. And I think if the answer was that Daniels wasn't healthy, that's a totally reasonable answer. Here's the problem, though. Over and over again, Smart has suggested something other than that. That the statement from Steve Daniels, JT's dad, to Dog Nation on, I guess, Sunday night was very well said. And if you're a Georgia fan, you love the idea that Daniels and his family are this comfortable at Georgia, essentially suggesting that it's injury-related, the reason why Daniels hasn't played before now. But Smart himself has said over and over again that it was something akin to a coach's decision, that they thought that someone other than Daniels gave them the best chance to win. Well, if Georgia had the data points about Daniels ahead of the Florida game, the fact that he was healthy, as healthy as he was last night — this was only 2 weeks ago, by the way — the fact that he was capable of making the throws that he made against Mississippi State, a better pass defense, by the way, than Florida's, at least statistically speaking, and Georgia chose to do something else, how could you not say that was a mistake?
Well, yes, I hear you, and I think there's some validity to that. But I also want to take in, you know, for fans, realize that training camp is when most of the evaluations occur, what leads into the season. And you have to go into that season with a plan. Who's our guy? Who's behind him? If JT Daniels was not 100% during those times and health was very much a factor, which I think he would express the same. That's what we've heard from the coaching staff, is that, you know, he wasn't medically cleared. Well, that is when most of the evaluation is occurring. Now, during the season, he's gotten healthier. He's been cleared. But he hasn't got the reps. You don't give opportunities to every player on your roster and say, we're going to evaluate constantly. You're trying. But at the end of the day, there's only so many snaps that you're going to take in a practice, especially that are borderline live. And it's hard to evaluate guys that are coming back from injury if they're not in that immediate discussion, which I think the timing couldn't have been better for JT off the bye week and then the COVID Missouri week, that gives you an opportunity to say, you know, he is healthy. He is the performer that we can finally see what he's capable of. Now, I'm coming to the defense of the staff a little bit here.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think we all have to scratch our heads and go, it's not really close. It's not close. What we've seen from the quarterback position and what we saw on Saturday, 90% JT Daniels sounds a lot better than some of the performance that we've seen in the past few weeks. And I think that's where the frustration and consternation comes from the fan base. But ultimately, we can't go back. You can't go back and,
right,
and edit and say, well, what if JT Daniels was the quarterback against Florida? You can't play that game. And it's decisions that were made, and we don't get to be privy to them. But I very much guarantee, for all those that are wondering, the fact that JT wasn't healthy during that most competitive phase where you're trying to set your depth chart, which is training camp, hamstrung him and his ability to be a part of that discussion early on in the season where the job was still grabs. And then you get into the season and, you know, you pick a horse and you're going to ride him. And that was Stetson Bennett for a while. And you're trying to build confidence in him because you've seen, I think we saw in week one and week two, his ability to flash, and maybe he's going to develop, and it just didn't play out that way. So you turn the page. It's JT Daniels moving forward, and you got to be excited about what he brings, because BA, man, did we need it on Saturday.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that. And I want to talk to you about what wasn't present for Georgia on Saturday before we're done. Let me squeeze in one more on this topic before we get there, though, and I want to provide the most generous explanation I think I can from the sort of program perspective on kind of how Daniels has been treated thus far. You know, Steve Daniels says to Dog Nation that he saw JT throwing late August, could see that he clearly wasn't 100%. As I said before you joined us, the people that I spoke to that saw Daniels in the third scrimmage, you know, he was just unremarkable in that scrimmage. Didn't play very much, but the moments when he did play, it's not like he was making the kinds of throws that Georgia fans saw that he was making on Saturday. There was also a moment Saturday morning that didn't get a lot of attention from UGA fans, but certainly jumped out to me. Reese Davis, during a segment on ESPN's College Game Day in discussing Daniels, ESPN reporting that he would start that night, Davis says, the host, that folks close to the Georgia program had told him that Daniels had not been practicing particularly well. So there is a chance, and you know, obviously no one would say this, but there is a chance that maybe the Georgia coaches themselves were caught off guard by just how good JT Daniels was. We've seen kind of the big 400-yard performances kind of come out of nowhere before from Georgia quarterbacks in the past. I would say those guys were, the most part, less talented than we believe JT Daniels to be. But out of nowhere, big QB performances are something that's happened for Georgia before. Maybe there wasn't a lot in practice leading up to this that would suggest Daniels would have as much success as he had on Saturday. There's at least some chance that's true, isn't there?
Yep, and I don't want to be the Debbie Downer of the conversation, but I don't think realistically you can expect 400 yards and four passing touchdowns on a weekly basis. I am grateful that he came in and performed the way he did, and I'm excited because you see the talent, and I thought he made great decisions and fired the ball into some tight windows and gave his wide receivers some chances. But, I don't think you have – this was an elite performance. I think there's going to be some ups and downs. It's not all going to be top of the mountain play on a weekly basis. So there is a reason. These coaches aren't idiots. They want to put the best players out on the field. There's a reason why JT Daniels hasn't been that starter. Now, the argument most certainly can be made that maybe he should have had this opportunity long before Saturday, but I refuse to believe that the coaches are just saying out of spite. What motivation do they have to say, JT, we just don't like him?
Why would they not play the best player if they have that information that JT is just lack of a better word, a superior talent at that position?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider update with John Stinchcomb. By the way, speaking of Marlowe's Tavern, if you haven't become a Marlowe's Tavern Insider, you definitely need to. It's the best way to get the most out of your Marlowe's Tavern experience. When you sign up, they're going to give you $10 off, $30 just for joining. They've also got a very special birthday offer for you there as well. Marlowe's is always a great place for the holiday season. Even in a year like this where social distancing still matters, there's a way to do that in a really fun way at a Marlowe's Tavern dining room as you head towards a chance to sort of celebrate with family and friends, those that you love. Or if you'd prefer to get the great tasting Marlowe's food, the chef inspired food that Marlowe's has made famous, and bring that to your own home, that's a great chance to do that too. But in order to take advantage of all the special savings, special offers, become a Marlowe's Tavern Insider. It's marlowestavern.com to find out a whole lot more about that. Marlowe's Tavern, cheers to that. So, John, let me kind of get intricate for a moment with an aspect from Saturday's game, and I'm curious, as a former player, specifically former offensive lineman, what you say about this. I've heard smart people say, in regards to Georgia's inability to run the ball on Saturday, that there's nothing that can be done. You know, maybe Mississippi State wasn't quite stacking the line of scrimmage, but to my eyes, it looked like they were like run blitzing or something like that, you know, throwing a bunch of guys, you know, from the front seven at the line of scrimmage as the ball was snapped, especially on some of the early downs there. And there's really nothing an offensive line can do when they're outnumbered the way that at times it seemed like they were on Saturday. I've heard other people say, no, that's just an excuse, that, you know, they've got to open up some holes so Georgia can still have the threat of a running game to go along with what JT Daniels was doing on Saturday. Admittedly, I'm just not smart enough to know. What do you think about what was a weirdly just, you know, vanished Georgia running game against Mississippi State on Saturday?
Yeah, and I think there's two answers to that. I heard Buck Ballou say, well, you know, five can't block seven, and he's right. I mean, there's times where Georgia was outnumbered at the point of attack. But my issue came with our five can certainly block five, and we didn't do that very well. I'm not one who likes to call out players, but when you have a senior guard, left guard, who performs the way he did, it's you're going to struggle. I mean, there was multiple times where you're just going, those either a missed mental error, missed assignment. We missed some blocks. We were on the edge of guys. We didn't take the good angles that we've seen before, and that starts piling up. And so that's one. The performance that we've seen, and line has performed really well overall this season with as many new faces as we had. It was really surprising for me to see the letdown, especially against the Mississippi State
defense that was a skeleton crew of what they normally have, and they're 2-4. It's not some dominant team, and we just we didn't play well. So execution was a problem. The other thing is when you go into a situation, and golly, I think you saw to ad nauseum against Florida, you find something that you like, and if you've got a matchup, you force the hand of the other team. You can either, you know, the adage of we'll take what the defense gives us, or you can dictate a little bit. So if you see these boxes that are loaded, there are packages, there are plays that you can call that force a defense. We're going to continue to pick you apart. If you do this, we'll do this until you change your ways. And, you know, I'm grateful that we were able to throw the rock around, because never once did Mississippi State feel pressured to change their defensive attack approach. I mean, they did. They brought the safety down a good bit, and that's probably why there were plays over the top. But it wasn't an opportunity where our offense started dictating what the defense had to do in response. So yeah. I think it starts off with lack of execution up front, and then just forcing the hand of the defense to make changes that never really occurred on Saturday.
Hey, one last thing, we'll squeeze this in. I always appreciate your time, John. Defensively, you know, it's one thing you give them, you know, big passing plays to Alabama and Florida. Those are pretty dynamic offenses. Even though it's the Mike Leach air raid, Mississippi State really hadn't moved the football against anyone since the week one game against LSU, even the game they won against Vanderbilt. I think they had like fewer than 200 yards offense all the way around. I think it was pretty alarming for some people in the early going of the game on Saturday, and really for a large portion of the game, that Mississippi State was finding so much success with kind of some of those, which I call underneath throws, safer throws. You know, Georgia's just not really putting up much of a resistance to that. You know, once again, I guess I'm kind of at a loss for how you prevent that from happening. Obviously, Mike Leach made a career of doing that kind of thing. What did you make of kind of some of the defensive issues that Georgia seemed to have?
Yeah, first, Vandy should have won that game against Mississippi State. So really, you're looking at like a 1-4 Mississippi State team. And I also recognize that our defense very rarely plays the package that we had in place for Saturday, this three-man rush with eight men in coverage and you know, zone defense. Well, that's nothing like what we've seen. You saw the breakdown from Jordan Rogers of the match man scheme. That's been the Georgia way. We adopted something specifically for Mississippi State, preparing for the triple option. Well, we look terrible. I mean, that's the worst I've seen our defense look in probably over 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the physicality of it, the hunger, you know, you saw the frustration. You saw guys barking at one another in the back end and from the linebacking core. You know, the bend but don't break mantra was abused. We just bend until you've bent to the point where there are points on the board. And that was, you know, it's the most disappointing performance I've seen from our defense in years. And I think it's a change from the identity of what they've established. And you know, I can't really put my finger on one specific thing. Obviously, the short and mid-game pass attack that Mississippi State brought, that's not a surprise to anyone. You watch their games, that's kind of their identity, but yet we never forced the issue. We weren't able to create as many turnovers as probably what was there, and they just continue to put themselves in winnable situations. All their third down, you know, I don't have the stat sheet in front of me, but their third down and distance was always favorable throughout the game. So they're winning on first and second down and having very manageable third down situations for a freshman quarterback, which is exactly what you want to dial up if you're Mike Leach in that offense. So at the beginning of the year, we're talking, should we bring out the junkyard dog moniker for this defense? And I think we can keep that one in storage, sir.
Yeah, we'll save that one. We'll save that one for another time, John. That is probably true all the way around. John, thank you so much for being here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. As I said to folks before, I hope you will be thinking about Marlowe's Tavern as you head towards this really fun holiday season. Become a Marlowe's Tavern Insider if you haven't before. John, I hope you're getting ready for a great Thanksgiving. I know we'll get a chance to speak again before the week is done, but I certainly hope you're getting ready to enjoy some great time with family and friends. And obviously, you know, we've got to stay healthy and safe here, but we want to connect with those that we love. That's what this time of year is all about. So, John, well wishes to you as you get a chance to hopefully do that.
And to you the same, and to the entire Bulldog Nation. I know it's been a unique slash rough year for all of us, but I think it highlights all the things that we've taken for granted for so long that we can be thankful for this year. So God bless you, and have a great Thanksgiving, and go Dawg.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Great stuff there from John Stinchcomb. I've got a lot I want to say about the SEC from the weekend. Before that, let me give a quick shout out to my friends at MyBookie. You know, it's winning season at MyBookie. That means if you're watching, you know, a really good Sunday night game last night or heading towards Monday, not just college football, got some pigskin heading towards the Thanksgiving holiday. All of that, a great way to make the games more enjoyable is get a little action down on the games. And with MyBookie, the winning actually for you begins before you even place your first bet. Right now, you can get up to a 50% deposit bonus. What that means is when you put money in your account to open up things with MyBookie, as a way of saying thank you, they're going to put more money in your account. Listen, this is the time of year where in most cases when it comes to checking and things like that, you got money going out of your account. You're buying a bunch of gifts. How about the fact that MyBookie says, we're actually going to put some money into your account. That means you put in $200, they're going to put an extra $100 in there for you, a 50% deposit bonus just for signing up. Then after that, at MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. But you got to understand this very clearly, though. If you want the 50% deposit bonus, if you want the extra money to make your wagers with, you've got to use the promo code DAWGNATION. All one word, D-A-W-G. Use the promo code DAWGNATION. Simply find MyBookie online. Type it in your browser. The internet will do the work for you. And then after that, use the promo code DAWGNATION. Get the 50% deposit bonus. You play, you win, you get paid at MyBookie. It's winning season, but make sure you use the promo code DAWGNATION. I thought there were two very big storylines in college football. One inside the SEC, one outside the SEC. I want to deal with both of those now just for a moment. I think the pecking order within the league is more clear than it's ever been. Now, listen, I'm not going to criticize Florida too much for a little bit of a letdown game against Vanderbilt. The truth is that Florida's been really good at avoiding those types of things. They have been handling overmatched opponents easily now for the last couple of years. But they did go on the road to Vanderbilt. Game was closer than it should have been for longer than it should have been. By comparison, Alabama beat Kentucky by 60 points. That is such an otherworldly beatdown of a team that's, I mean, Kentucky's got a little bit of a pulse. I'm not going to tell you that they're, you know, best team in the world, world beaters, anything like that, but they've got a little bit of a pulse. I mean, it'd be hard to beat any team by 60 points, and for a Kentucky team that's going to win some SEC games, has won some SEC games, the fact that Alabama's beaten them by 60 points, there should be no doubt right now who the best team in the SEC is. It is Alabama. That's not to say that in a one-game scenario, the circumstances couldn't conspire so that Florida could win that. I think they could. I think the SEC championship game should actually be a pretty fun game to watch, even though I obviously hate the Gators. But as of right now, you cannot go into December assuming that Florida is on the same page as Alabama. They are not. I'd even say the same thing right now about quarterback, where it seems like Trask has kind of emerged as a little bit more of a, and I say fan favorite, I don't mean people who have a fan, you're fans of a school. I mean just the general talk seems to favor Trask right now over Mac Jones for the Heisman. I think it's important to remember Mac Jones is not playing these full games, and yes, he's got a lot of weapons at his disposal. But I would think very long and hard before I, you know, talked about Trask for the Heisman over Mac Jones. Alabama's just a machine right now, and Mac should get a ton of the credit for that. I'll also say this in relationship to the SEC, and folks are going to say I'm just a hater, and that's fine, but I feel like I've got a leg to stand on this. I've got no problem with Texas A&M currently being rated ahead of Florida. It's not always true that the team that wins the head-to-head is the better team. You know, no one would have said, for instance, South Carolina was better than Georgia last year, even though they had the head-to-head win over UGA. Head-to-head wins are not always the argument-ending data point that some of us maybe want to think they are. But if we're not going to say that head-to-head matters, then what's the point of even playing the game? So I've been very clear on this. Assuming that A&M ever gets to play some games again, if it were to run the table, if it's 9-1 and it's got the head-to-head win over Florida, then I actually think that Texas A&M ought to get playoff consideration ahead of Florida. Now, if Florida does something that A&M didn't do and, you know, beats Alabama, then maybe you have to listen to that as a little bit of a round robin at that point in time. But, you know, in the comparison between Florida and Texas A&M, the head-to-head win should matter. Otherwise, what's the point of playing the game? So, in terms of, you know, Florida's national perception, I think Alabama doing what it did to Kentucky on Saturday ought to get your attention on that in a really big way. So, if we say the SEC is clearer than it's been before, I think the events of Saturday for the college football playoff picture became far murkier. Now, I'll say it to you this way. This is a year in which we're not getting to see as much football as we want, but we're all grateful that we're at least getting some football. We all agree with that, right? And so it's not a college football playoff that's going to be deliberated perfectly, because we're not seeing non-conference games. We're not seeing 12 games. We're not seeing a lot of the comparisons that we would make to allow us to feel really good about who the four best teams in the country are. Now, even in a normal year, there's a lot of debate about who the playoff should be. But in this particular year, we know that on the basis of the fact there's a limited amount of football and the best teams in the country from Conference A aren't really quite playing the best teams in the country from Conference B, those non-conference games aren't taking place. So the gentleman, or lady, if you will, the agreement we've all made here is that we're willing to make some assumptions for this particular year. We're willing to have a college football playoff that's heavily leaning in the direction of, well, this is probably what I think are the four best teams. I don't really know for sure, but this is the best guess we can make in a year like this. Understanding that as the scenario that leads in the college football playoff, I don't think this was a good weekend for the playoff selection committee. If you wanted to feel good about the four teams that you're left with, two things that happened this week I think make that a little bit more difficult to do. The fact that Ohio State struggled with Indiana is all of a sudden now going to make it a little bit more difficult to just rubber stamp the Buckeyes and put them in the college football playoff. Now, I probably think they are still one of the four best teams, and I think Indiana's probably a decent team, and it's probably not anything Ohio State has to apologize for playing a game in conference close. But most people don't think Indiana's very good. And, you know, most people have a tendency to sometimes be right about these kinds of things. So if Ohio State does, on the basis of a limited amount of football, just moonwalk their way into the college football playoff, all of a sudden now the voices of people who are saying, wait, are we sure they're one of the four best teams? Simply on the basis of the fact they were in the playoff a year ago, you know, not having played necessarily great defense this year, with the exception of Justin Fields, not exactly, you know, tearing it up when it comes to running game. This is not a perfect Ohio State team. They've got Fields, and I know Fields threw three picks on Saturday, but he's had a great season. But there are some things for the Buckeyes this year that haven't quite been particularly Buckeye-like. So there are going to be some people who are going to say, wait a second, why do they have an automatic ticket to the college football playoff when we've seen very little football from them and you want to make the comparison to other places? Here's the other thing that's tricky, too. If we're going to say that Ohio State is kind of an easy ride in the college football playoff, you'd potentially want to say the same thing about Clemson there as well. After all, they've been in every playoff since, what, 2015? They've been, you know, every playoff since then. Well, they didn't get a chance to play Saturday. Clemson has not played a lot of football, and, you know, without Trevor Lawrence, they lost to Notre Dame the other day, and I think a lot of folks have assumed, well, they'll just shake that off, they'll win the ACC, and they'll get in the college football playoff, and who knows, maybe Notre Dame will go there as well. But Clemson missing the game on Saturday, and frankly, I've got no problem with Dabo Swinney for calling out Florida State on this. I think Swinney was right for stepping up and saying what he said, but Clemson not getting a chance to play on Saturday, in addition to kind of being frustrating for Clemson, actually puts the playoff selection committee in a bind, because we have assumed that Clemson one of the four best teams, but we have very little evidence to support that. In other words, this is a year in which the college football playoff selection process is going to feel a little bit manufactured, a little bit contrived, and Ohio State, by not winning convincingly on Saturday, Clemson, by not getting a chance to play at all, I think only served to make that even more so. I was going to talk about Jeremy Pruitt here. I've gone pretty long on that. Let me save Pruitt for tomorrow, and we'll go ahead and wrap up the program. I thought that John, on the subject of the Georgia running game a little earlier, kind of brought up a pretty good point that, you know, these things do work in concert with each other. Is it symbiosis? Is that the word I'm looking for? That's probably it. fancier word than someone as uneducated as me should try to use. But the symbiosis, the symbiotic relationship, I believe is the way you say it, between passing game and running game. I'm actually not that worried about Georgia not running the ball on Saturday, because I do believe that Mississippi State, and why wouldn't you, given the way that Georgia has played and kind of every game leading up to this and the last couple of years, really, Mississippi State was sold out to stop the run on Saturday. Teams have been able to do that because Georgia has not shown a particularly competent ability to pass the ball. I think it's interesting now, on the basis of what Georgia did on Saturday, throwing the ball all over the yard, teams have a choice to make now. And for Georgia running game that at times has left a little something to be desired this season, the presence of JT Daniels could really change that for the future. Daniels is a big, big get for UGA. Can't wait to see where they go next, and can't wait to see you tomorrow right back here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.